Be doers of the word with 657 AM, Sounds of Life.
Die lese van manne stories is Our Story, His Glory. Vanmôre is dit nie iets anderster nie, dit is 'n baie spesiale storie, but we've got a special guest all the way from New York. And Stanley is with us, and Stanley, so welcome here in South Africa.
Well, thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to be here. And South Africa, good morning, good day, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time zone you're in. I'm happy to be here.
I'm going to give over to you, Stanley, because you survived the 911 episode. But we are so interested to listen to you and hear your story concerning that surviving.
Yes, sir. Well, listeners, good morning again, or whatever time difference you are. Greetings. I bring you greetings from New York City, where I live. My name, like our pastor said here just now, my name is Stanley Premnath. I serve in our church, Bethel Assemblies of God in Queens, New York, as an associate pastor, a licensed minister of the gospel, and I'm the administrative pastor for my church. I'm also the men's group leader, and bottom line is, I'm the guy who does all the little work on the side where nobody wants to do it. I'm now retired from my secular job, so I spend a little more time with the church, and I travel upon requests or invitations, any place that the Lord wants me to go. But this morning I have a story of deliverance, a story of hope, a story that would build your faith. September 11th started as a wonderful day. And I remember that morning, I'm taking a shower and I'm praying the same prayer that I've carried in my heart for many, many years. Lord, cover me and all my loved ones under your precious blood. Take us to work and bring us back home in peace and safety. And my wife is fixing her hair, and she is telling me that she is having a bad hair day. And if wanted today, after 35 years of marriage, I still can't figure out what a bad hair day is. So I commute to Lower Manhattan, the World Trade Center where I work. At Fuji Bank Limited, I work as an assistant vice president. So I basically help to run the operation for that Japanese bank. So I commute by driving. And it would take me an approximation of driving and taking the train to go to work 2.5 hours one way. So I commuted at an average 5 hours per day. And sometime that job would last to a point where I get home 9, 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. The next morning I go again. So there was nothing odd about that day. I took the car. I went, parked up on the streets, and I took the train and I went to work. I stopped in the same bagel store, picked up a raisin bagel, a cup of coffee, and I was at a lobby now at the World Trade Center. I pushed a button, and before you know it, I'm zoomed up to the 78th floor of the Sky Lobby, less than 45 seconds. I got up from there, took the local elevator, went to the 84th floor where I worked. I walked all the way from the north side of the building, right down the corridor, the hallway that is, to the south side of the building, an approximation of 1 acre square, one floor was. And as I got into the office, a young lady was making copies at a copier. I remember her name, Delise Seriano. And we exchanged pleasantry. I remember she asked me, Stan, how you doing? And I told her I was special. And the reason why I told her I was special, because in New York City, people are so busy. By the time you ask them how they're doing, they were gone. And some people would stop and ask you, why are you special? And I would tell them, because I'm a child of God. And that would give me an opening to bless their hearts for that day. And that's how I did my little part of ministry. But I took my religion very seriously, because I worked with Buddhists and Shintos and Bushidos and a handful of Catholics who did not understand the saving grace of God. I do. So my Bible was always on top of my desk. So as I got and exchanged pleasantry with Delise, we were in the middle of a consolidation slash a merger. I had two desks. So my phone was ringing on one desk, and about 6 to 8 feet away, there was another desk where I would sit. So as I'm walking towards the desk, the phone rang, and I picked it up, and my mother was on the phone, and she asked me, Stan, how are you doing? I'm okay. And I have three other brothers, Steve, Paul, and Bill, and each one of them called and asked me the same question. But nobody never told me that the first plane had hit the first building. I was in a lift coming up, the elevator that is, and the building is soundproof, so I didn't know what happened outside. So I hung up the phone and I'm saying to myself, that's a lot of love here. It's not even 9 o'clock, and all these good folks are reaching out to me, finding out how I'm doing. So as I'm walking now, as I hung up the phone, walking towards my desk, I can see a corner of my eyes, the North Tower, which is one World Trade Center. We call it World Trade Center 1 and 2. So I work in the second tower, the South Tower, that is. I can see like huge chunks of fireballs falling from the sky. So I walked closer, and I'm looking way up. The plane had hit the first building, and I called out to Delise, come, take a look. Let's see what is happening. And she said, oh, my God, Stan, I'm scared. So I walk back to the phone, pick up the phone, and I'm calling my boss, Peter Del Grasso. Pete-san, pick up the phone. San is, in Japanese, Mr. or Sir. He's not answering the phone. So I call his boss, Bob Militaglio. Now, these were friends of mine more than my bosses. Bobby, pick up the phone. There's no response. So I told Delise, we got to get out of here. So we ran out of the office and walked all the way down the corridor, the hallway that is, back to where the local elevator is on the north side of the building. We got there, pushed us the button in the elevator, and we went down to the 78th floor, the Sky Lobby. Multiple elevators, hundreds of people, everybody is waiting on the elevator to go downstairs. As we waited, the elevator stopped and opened up right to where I was standing. I stepped in, 16 other people, Delise and I, 18, we got in the elevator. Not a word is said, and less than 45 seconds, we're back on the lobby. The doors open up. The doors were opening up in the front and at the back, depending how you go in. So I went in first. The door opens up around me. I stepped out. And the security guard says, where are you going? I said, I'm going home. I saw fireballs coming down from the first building. And he says, no, your building is safe. It's secure. Go back to your office. And you can hear the intercom system. You can hear the speakers. You can hear the whoop-whoop signal, woo-woo-woo, the alarm system. And you can hear this voice over the recording. Your building is safe, it's secure, go back to your office. And at that point, Delise told me, she said, Stan, I'm scared, I want to go home. I said, well, take the rest of the day off. And somebody in the elevator, one of my bosses, says, Stan, how can you do this? We have an operation here to run. I said, no, I'm running the operation and she is going home. I never spoke to my bosses like that. But I think on that day, I had to be a mouthpiece for the person who can't express or not don't have the authority to say it. So I said, no, I'm running the operation. She's going home. And that was probably the best decision I ever made in my life. And as this young lady is walking away, she's turning back, looking at me. Are you sure? Yes, go. And she's gone. And two men are holding the doors. They're leaning against the door from preventing it to close. One was Jack Andriacchio, and one was Manny Gomez. And Jack said, Stan, man, come on. We can't wait here all day. And the other one said, well, come on, Stan, you're a big guy. What are you scared about? But all my bosses and everybody is in the elevator. Nobody came out. And I'm wondering, what should I do? My bosses are there. They want to go back up. I can't go home. And I did not know that the plane had hit the first building. Had I known, chances are I would not have gone back in that elevator. So half-heartedly, I stepped back in that elevator. As I'm walking in that elevator, very quickly, I'm reliving 1993, February 26th, when they truck bombed the Trade Center for the first time. I remember I was in the North Tower, One World Trade, and my supervisor at the time, Sophia Huang, had ordered Chinese food from Chinatown. Now, we were having lunch. We were sitting across a table from each other. And the guy packed up 1,200 pounds of explosives in a pickup truck. And he wired it to it's a remote control. He walks away one block and he presses the button. Boom. And a bomb exploded. And within seconds, the smoke rose through the vents. The lights flickered. It went totally dark. And Sophia started to scream, oh, God, we're going to die. We're going to die. And I sat down very calm, and I ate my pork chop, And I said, Lord, if I'm coming with you today, I'm coming with a full stomach. And she looked at me as if I was weird. But thank God I did, because I got home 2 o'clock that next morning. I didn't have a cell phone. So now as the smoke rose, we were evacuated to higher floors. And they had wanted to airlift us off from the roof. But it was too windy, and they chose not to do it. But after that event, the nail shut the door that leads to the roof. So when 9/11 come, chances are people were trying to make their way up, not realizing the door was nail shut. And they didn't ever had time to come back down. And half-heartedly, I walked back in that elevator. And I'm looking at all these faces of all these people that I would never see again. And I still remember this Japanese fella, Kawauchi. He had his sweater tucked in his khakis, and I went and I pulled it out. I says, come on, man, it's a warm day. And the other folks laughed and says, only Stanley could do that. But these guys were more my friends than my co-workers and my bosses. They had a certain respect and regard for me, and I had the same for them. And I can still remember this young lady look at me, and she's smiling, not realizing that I would never see that smile again. And within 45 seconds, we were back on the 78th floor. And one man stepped out in that elevator before me, and we went to the local elevator, pushes the button. This man was out of a job for a long time, and my boss took compassion and hired him as a consultant, and he forgot his laptop and he was going for it. And the man walks into the men's room, and I never saw that man again. And I always ask myself, why? Why, Lord? Why? Why of all these good men and women, why you chose me? And I suffered with that survival guilt for a long, long time, until I asked myself, Stan, why not you? What makes you different? So I walked all the way back into the office, and as I walked there, the telephone rings again. Telephone's ringing, I picked it up, and a young lady from Chicago, one of our rep offices, she's calling me. Now there's about an hour time difference, so she's home, they're watching this episode on TV, they know it's a terrorist attack, but I didn't know anything. And all she says was, Stan, get out. Get out for what? I'm a logical-minded person. Tell me why, and I'll go. Stan, we don't have time. Come on. Are you not watching the monitor? You're not watching the TV? You're not listening to the news, Stan? Please go. Please go. Now, where I sat, if I was to look an angle to my left, I could have seen part of the Brooklyn Bridge. Straight, I could have seen the Statue of Liberty. Swivel on the chair, I could have seen Jersey City overlooking the Hudson, and if I turn a little bit more, I could have seen part of the North Tower. So, something tells me, Stan, look up. Phone still in my hand, I looked up, and I was confronted by a plane. Small at first, getting larger by the split second, gray in color, with U on the tail, United Airways 175 flight number. I'm mesmerized. Hypnotized, sort of. The plane is coming towards me. And as the plane is coming, you can see the plane starts to tilt. And I can hear that revving sound that the engine makes, like when a plane is taking off. Within a split second, all I remember is saying, Lord, I can't do this. You take over. And I dove under the desk. And within a split second, I heard, boom. And with the most thunderous sound, the plane crashed into the building. Upon impact, my ears got popped inside. I couldn't hear, as if I got deaf. The floor above me collapsed and is hovering under the desk, or just above the desk. It looks like a demolition crew came and ripped the entire office apart. Every wall is flattened, every furniture is mangled. The cables in the ceiling dropped and they're short-circuiting. The sprinkler system came on and they're sparking. A large chunk of the plane is stuck in my office doorway 20 feet from where I am. There are flames all around me. One way or another, I'm going to die. I'm going to get electrocuted, or I'm going to get sucked out by the air pressure, or I'm going to get crushed by that floor above me. I'm going to die. And all I remember saying, Lord, I don't want to die. Please send somebody, anybody to help me. And that split second, the Lord heard my petition and helped us on the way. At the other end of the floor, somebody had a flashlight and is flashing it all over his head. And even though I'm telling the man, wait for me, and he can hear me and he's responding, I couldn't hear him. And I started to crawl. I crawled the entire length of the loans department to the lounge, in the computer room, in the communication room, the length of 1 acre. And when I got there, I was confronted by one wall, a drywall, 10 feet in height. And I always asked that question like I asked that day, Lord, if you wanted me to die, why didn't you allow me to die there? Why did you bring me all the way here to leave me? What is going to befall my wife and our 2 children? Who's going to walk them down that aisle when they get married? With all those bills that we have, how is my wife going to be able to manage to take care of 2 children? And the person behind the wall says, bang on the wall, Alan, know where you are. And I started to hear faint bang on the wall. The man says, now climb over the wall. I can't do it. Just try. I tried to jump and grab out on top, and I missed, and part of the hanging loose sheet rock gave in. And trying to prevent it from hitting my face, I raised up my hand, and a black sheetrock screw went in my hand, my palm, and got stuck on the other side. Like, oh my God. He said, what happened? I said, a nail went in my palm. He says, bite it out and try again. I says, no, I can't do it. He said, is it attached to a piece of wood? Yes. I took the second option, hit the wood, and the nail came out, and the hand just ballooned. And I'm crying out to this invisible God that I've heard so much about. Every Sunday I hear about his God, and I pray to this God, and Lord, know I need your help. Please help me. And all I can hear is one thing the pastor is preaching and saying, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And the man behind the wall is hearing me and think I was crazy. And all I remember doing was to make a fist as tightly as I could. And I punched with all the force I can muster. And the fist went right through that sheetrock wall, the dry wall. The man grabbed my hand. He said, I see your fist. I said, well, when you see my head, yank my body through. And I punched, and the hole got bigger, and I stuck my head. And the man gave me a headlock, one fluid motion, grabbed me around the neck and the shoulder. And he pulled with such force, and I squirmed, and I flew over on the other side. Knock him off his feet, and together we rolled down 10 flights of stairs, and now we are on the 88th floor. And I didn't know how to thank that man who just saved my life. And I hugged that man and gave him a kiss on the cheek, and he says, what are you doing? And he got up, fixed his jacket and his tie, and he says, Brian Clark. And I said, Stanley Premnett. But this man held on to my hand, didn't let go, and he took his left index finger, and he was rubbing the wound very gently. And he stared me in the eyes, and he told me something that I'll remember for the rest of my life. He says, all my life I live as an only child. I was born and raised in Canada. I always wanted a brother, and I found that man today. This good old Irish man, he took his left palm that was bleeding and took my right hand and rubbed it together. He said, from today you're my blood brother. And he put his hand around my shoulder and he says, come on, buddy, let's go home. And we started that long journey home. I have 80 floors to go. I had a large leg wound that was opening up, and I took my shirt, make a bandage, and tied it up. And I'm hobbled down the stairs with Brian. And as we're going, I'm telling him, we got to hurry. This building is going. Stan, this building is not going anyplace. What is he burning here is all draperies and cosmetic and paper. By profession, I'm an engineer, steel on bend. But in my spirit, it's going, and I don't know what going meant. And I couldn't breathe, but I was in the best shape of my life. And I'm breathing hard. And he says, we got to stop. And we stop on the 45th floor. And he put his hand around against the door, and he says, there's no heat coming out. And then he opened up the door. We stepped in somebody's office. When we stepped in, he picked up a phone, and he called his wife. And I can hear the conversation. He's telling the wife, Diane, I've got this fella here from Fuji Bank. He's in bad shape, but I'm bringing him home. And while he's talking, something caught my attention. There's a man lying down, broken back, massive head injury. His skull was like caved in, closely shaved head. And an African-American security guard stood by, and he is guarding this man. This is a white man on the ground, and this is just a black man who's a security guard. I don't like to describe people in color. But unless I say it, you would never understand what this means. And this man chose to stay and guarded this man, a total stranger, with his life, who could have escaped. And together they perished. It was a day when the color of his skin did not matter. It was a day when we all looked alike. It was a day when we were covered by the same ash. It was a day when God intervened on our behalf. And this man is crying out the same cry that I hear every night. Please tell my wife and our baby that I love them. We just got married. And Brian is frantically dialing 911 and no help is coming. And we left and we went. When we reached the downstairs on the lobby level, the only people we saw there were the firefighters and the cops and the EMS workers. And they were belching orders, run, 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 go to Liberty Street. Liberty Street ran right in front of the World Trade Center building. And I'm telling Brian, this is God's doing. I'm going to Trinity Church, and I don't know why I'm going to Trinity Church. I've never gone into that church before. It was like about 4 blocks away from the building. I've never visited that church. I've just passed and see the church here. But I don't know in my head, I have to go to Trinity Church. As we were running out, people are jumping out of the building and a burning log is falling down. And not even one piece of anything touched us. As if the Lord was protecting us, forming it a hedge over us. As if a mother hen has a wing protecting her chicks. And we were running. And as we were running, I bumped into this Catholic priest. He had his hand folded and he's watching this entire spectacle as you're watching a scene from a horror movie. And as I bumped into the guy says, oh my God, what happened? You need the hospital badly. Every person who I've met that day told me the same thing. I need the hospital badly. And he says, but you need prayers. And Brian Little told me that, Stan, you were babbling in a language I don't understand. And I'm not bilingual. One person says, you were probably praying in tongues and I don't know. But all I remember, I'm holding on to the fence of the Trinity Church. And I'm breathing hard. And then Brian is going. And he looked at me and says, Stan, you're in shock. Get out of that shock. It's not going anywhere. Steel don't bend. Remember, I'm an engineer. And he stopped what he was saying. And the building starts to sway. All the way to the right. I'm like, oh gosh, it's going down, it's going down. And then all the way back and starts swaying to the left. And we are kind of swaying with the building. And then it stopped and it started vibrating. And you can feel this earth like it's trembling. Like a tremor. And the next thing we know, the building imploded, floor after floor after floor, like a pancake effect. Boom, boom, boom. Because we were hiding behind the church took the blunt force of every form of debris that went poof. It protected us from getting hurt. So every step of the way, the Lord is protecting us. And Brian and I got separated from each other. And I can hear Nat scream, Stanley! But in my heart, this is my guardian angel who brought me out from Sodom and Gomorrah to perfect safety. Then sulfur rained, fire rained. And in my heart, they're bombing the financial area. I have to go save my wife, Jenny. Jenny had worked for the New York Stock Exchange, but did the software update, and they were hidden over the Brooklyn Bridge. And the next thing I remember, I got angry. For the first time in my life, I got really angry. And I'm looking around for something, not sure what I was looking for, and I saw a man driving a white 4x4 pickup truck. I ran alongside, yanked the door open, looked at the man, and says, one word from you, you're dead, drive. So I jump in that truck, and he says, where to? I said, Brooklyn Bridge. And he was scared, and he reached on top of his dashboard, picked up a box of cigarette, and he says, here, smoke. I said, nah, I had enough smoke for one day. And he laughed a little bit, then he's looking at me, and when we reach the ramp of the bridge, I opened the door, thank you, jumped out, and I'm running. Get out of my way, get out of my way. I gotta go save my wife. And I bump into this big guy. The guy turned around, looks at me, and he says, what happened? I said, just come up from the building, just came out. And then the guy said, my name is Albert De Leon. I'm a senior counsel for a French bank. Ask me for anything. I said, show me how to get it to Metro Tech Center, because I never visited Jenny there. It was too much of security. And he says, I live right behind that building. What is that chance? 40,000 people on top of the bridge. One man you bump into, he knows exactly where you got to go. So I said, I'm not going. He says, why not? I said, because they hotwire the bridge and everybody's going to die. So he says, what? So the next thing, we jumped up and he says, tell me what you can hear. I said, that's the F-16 hovering there. That's Uncle Sam taking care of business. And he says, okay, let's go. We ran. We reached the lobby there. And the security guard says, oh, no, you're not coming in here. And the bottom line is, as they came and they surrounded us, Greg, my wife's boss, came, pushed the people away and says, what are you doing? Stan is a good guy. And he says, give Stan anything he wants. Make him well. But Stan, I can't stay here. I need to go to this white shirt and he gave me. And the nurse says, no, 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 I'll give her my jacket. And Greg was gone. And the nurse says, I can't send you home because they shut down the parkway. I said, no, if I can get to hear my wife's voice, I will be fine. Picked up the phone and I'm playing with the numbers. The number pops in my head and I call and here's Jenny. What are you doing this for? Please don't do this. My husband is dead. And when I heard those words, I was never the same again. Eventually, I got home. When I got home, my little daughter, Caitlin, would not recognize me because I was black and blue, covered in blood, swollen. I was literally a bloody mess. And I reached for Stephanie. And the child had a butter knife in one hand. She just had a sandwich. And she says, Dad, if you didn't come home, I was going to kill myself. And after all that I went through that day, it didn't mean anything because I left home that morning with a prayer in my heart. And now it was time for a Thanksgiving. I hugged Jenny and the two girls and I says, Lord, thank you. And the next thing I know, I'm lying down and the doctor is leaning over me and he said, this man lost his mind. I lost everything. I lost my speaking vocabulary, my memory, and eventually I snapped out, and it's all because of the grace of God. Had God not intervened in my life, I would have died. So today I want to encourage you, there's hope, there's salvation, there is God. And if you make God in the center of your life, he's going to take care of all your shortcomings. And he's going to bring you out to the miry clay. He's going to put your feet in the rock to stay. And he's going to put a song in your soul. A song of praise. Hallelujah. May God richly bless you. Spread the good news. Amen.
Stanley, what an amazing story. It was so encouraging listening to you. But this is going to be the first part. And the next time we're going to continue. And because I think you need to, the people need to hear some more about you. Until the next time, this is Mana Stories, today with a special story, very, very far from here. We'll see you next time.
Praise the Lord. Amen.
Be doers of the word with 657 AM, Songs of Life.